What up?
Championship.
Coming at ya! Welcome to another edition of App Radio. Championship Browns with GG. The MMA junkie GG himself. The man who stays up at all late hours just to watch soccer. I'm not sure I know enough about soccer to defend myself, Proteus, but let's introduce the man of the hour, the one and only GG Gorgeous George. Hit it.
Well, thank you, fellas. I love that stuff. Great intro.
GG, by the way, are you familiar with, I know that your song happens to be obviously, Do You Think I'm Sexy, right? Rod Stewart. Are you familiar with the first song that I played?
No, I'm not.
All right, so you got to listen to that. So there's a band. Did you ever get into industrial at all? Industrial music?
I would say no. I was more of a mainstream guy. So whether it was mainstream rock or just pop 40 in general, but if I ever deviated, I would say that it was mostly with what was current, I guess. I was a poser trying to be with the cool crowds. You had to keep up with what was cool.
Well, I know in SoCal, obviously, you know, the number one radio station for any sort of like new wave / alternative or modern was K-Rock, right? That was the station for you guys, right?
Correct.
All right. So, and you know who Richard, gosh, what was his name? Richard somebody Richard was the number one DJ. Richard Blades. All right. So, and there was a band called Ministry. I don't know if you remember this back in the 80s, and they did a lot of the songs. There was a guy by the name of Alan Jorgensen who was like a weird Cuban guy, and he was in this new wave band called Ministry, which where he was doing the fake English accents. He then actually, that band then became a industrial band where he actually started a genre, believe it or not. He's all tatted up and drugged out and all this other stuff, but he actually made a band called the Buzzcocks. I don't know if you're familiar with that, but he does a great version of Do You Think I'm Sexy. It's an industrial version. You got to hear that song. That song's bitching if you get a chance. So we got to get you to hear that one. And that's what I play in the beginning. That's your intro to Championship Browns.
Well, I'll tell you what. I will try and check that song out. I had never heard of him. But I'll tell you something about Richard Blade. He's supposed to DJ our high school reunion coming up. Later on this year, so we're all pretty stoked about that because a lot of us grew up listening to Richard Blade on K-Rock, like you said, and now he's on First Wave, which is also on Sirius XM, so I catch that a lot too. So it's pretty cool that one of the girls we graduated with also got into radio and TV, and she interned for him, so she had the idea, and I guess they were able to make a deal.
Way to go. Proteus, what do you have for the one and only GG?
So, GG, I guess that lightens the sting or the burn a little bit of them not wanting to come to Vegas for the reunion, correct? Having the Blade there, maybe that makes up for it?
Yeah, that's cool. The only problem is, I mean, yeah, you're right. It does make up for it, to answer your question, but I still feel like they're missing the boat, you know. I guess we're looking to have it at our high school gym, and I think it's gonna be kind of lame, honestly. I think it'll be great that he's there, but it's there's nothing that stands out about it. And the one thing I was always proud of the high school I went to was it was a Catholic high school. A lot of rich kids went there. I wasn't one of them, but Like in keeping in touch with a lot of my friends from high school, you could tell that they came from well-to-do families, and so they had some obvious opportunities, and they took advantage. And so there's a lot of people that have done well for themselves, you know. And it's just bizarre to me that no one wants to reach in their pocket and do something like out of the norm a little bit, you know. Like even the other classes, like because we get this newsletter, and you'll see like the class before us or the class after. They're having it like at a mansion, or they're having it at closing down some restaurant or something like that, and it's going to be a private party. And yet our fucking class keeps going back to the same thing, just back to the gym. I mean, there's nothing attractive about the gym. It's a nice gym, and we have historically an awesome high school basketball team that you know, so there's lots of stuff hanging from the rafters. But, you know, I don't know. I don't know that. For this year, I just feel like they could have broken the norm. Richard Blade's always in Vegas, and I know he's going to be in Vegas the weekend that I pitch to them, because that's when Depeche Mode's playing, and I know Richard's going to be there. So, Richard can actually broadcast from our studio as well. So it was all lined up where everything could have been handled there, you know. So yeah, it's cool, Proteus, that we're still having him, but we could have had him in Vegas for a whole weekend. Depeche Mode, wow. Richard Blade doing our party, and then just, you know how Vegas is. Vegas, you just tend to like let loose a little bit more and have a little bit more fun. I think it would have been a lot more memorable.
Well, I have to say that the Swedish Eagle is probably my favorite disc jockey on First Wave. I just enjoy his... The weird way that he speaks, just to choke out SiriusXM again.
Yeah, he's cool. I'm glad that the one thing Richard's been is loyal, because you hear a lot of the same guys that I grew up with, you know, through K-Rock, Doug the Slug and Freddie Snakeskin and, you know, all these others. They've kind of just stayed together, man. It's pretty cool that they were able to come up with this channel, and that channel does well. And I'll tell you one last thing here about First Wave 33 on SiriusXM. But on Saturday night, they have the safety dance, and it goes from 5 a.m. to 1 a.m. So it's 8 hours continuous, and it's a guy named Bueller. He never speaks. Yes. He never speaks. Yeah, they actually play that when he's throughout the set, that soundbite. But he never speaks, and he just jams for 8 hours straight. And that dude is sick when it comes to mixing 80s remixes. I mean, he's just on point, and he comes up with versions I've never even heard before. You try and tag him, you can't even find him, and he's legit.
You know what's funny? That's DJ Bueller, right, is the DJ that I always thought I was. And clearly I wasn't. But the one thing about DJ Bueller is, how many times, Gigi, can you continue to hear safety dance? I swear, if I hear safety dance one more time, I am going to literally pull my hair out, whatever I have left. I'm not joking. Because that safety dance song, just, oh my gosh. That and One Night in Bangkok, Gigi. I don't need to hear those songs again.
Well... they are pretty painful, but, you know, he mixes it up with a lot of other nuggets that you never hear throughout the week. And I guess if you have to put up with it once a week, you know, you'll do it. Now, I'll, as loyal of a listener as I am, I'm not just sitting at home listening to all 8 hours, so I don't catch them every week. And it just seems like it hasn't gotten to the point where it gets on my nerves just yet, but I hear you.
So I have to ask you this. So,
dance, if you're interested,
go for it.
I have a story about the safety dance, because we were talking about it so much here. My friend and I, we ran for student council in high school, obviously, social conveners. Of course, we won because we're awesome. But we used the safety dance right at the beginning of our pitch for people to elect us. Maybe not so interesting to you guys, but I just. With a nice memory in my head.
I'm telling you, man. Right. You look back, you know, at some of the stuff that we've done. I was bringing up, I think we had, let me see, it was when we had Joseph Benavidez and Megan Olivia in studio, and we were just talking about you know, our memories. And she was telling us how her and some friends dressed up as the Spice Girls, and she was Posh mm-hmm. Spice. And I was telling her about when me and some buddies did the Village People. And at the time,
oh my
cool.
gosh,
yeah, it was a good time. And then, like a few years later, somebody produces a video or a picture, and you're like, "What the fuck was I thinking?" And then, you know, a few years later after that, you realize I was having fun. It was cool. It still is cool. You know, you just kind of go through some phases, but those memories are what kind of builds your character, man.
Hey, Gigi, going to that realm, obviously you had Joseph Benavidez, who the time before he was on actually really, I mean, he started telling you these fascinating stories about his time where he may have had substance abuse issues, et cetera. Can you remember a time that, besides, I'm assuming that one, where a fighter or someone that you had in the studio that just completely amazed you with either them coming out with something or something that you hadn't heard before?
Man, that's a good question, Tony. I often joke about how terrible of a memory I have on the show, and sometimes I embellish a little because there are times where I remember shit, and I'm like, wait a minute, I guess maybe it's not so bad after all, but I'm just going to stick with the theme. But let me see here. What would be a good one? Let me see if I can produce one. Well, okay, well, I mean, I'll stay in line with the street fight story theme that we have on our show. Like, Phil Baroni's a guy that I grew up booing, because when he came on the scene as the New York badass, you know, he just kind of represented that meathead mentality, East Coaster, I guess. And so I did not like him one bit. I couldn't wait for a fight with him, you know, to be on it and hope that he got his ass kicked. Now, most of the time he was winning when I was watching, and the couple of times he lost, I was like, yeah, take that, you know? And, but then over the years, when I moved to Vegas and he had moved to Vegas and we crossed paths, and he really just turned out to be a genuinely nice guy. And I've confessed to him many times how I used to not cheer for him. And he eventually won me over, because even as an adult, I was still, I guess, blinded by the fact that athletes can take on a character role. You know, like in wrestling, it's painfully obvious, but in other sports, I think sometimes athletes just, you know, they try and represent like they're one type of person, and, you know, they're quite the opposite. And in Phil's case, I think he realized I can just get somewhere with this New York badass persona. And it's a testament of how bright he really is. And a lot of people label him as, you know, kind of like a meathead, but this guy's a psychology major. He got his degree. So he's, you know, he's very smart. And, but what I'm getting at is, so now we have him on the show and I ask him to tell us a street fight story. So I'm thinking the New York badass is going to talk about, you know, maybe something like what Chuck Zito used to do, knock someone out at Scores in New York or something. I'm just waiting. I'm chomping at the bit. And then all of a sudden he tells us a story about him getting beat up by male cheerleaders at, I think it was Western Michigan University that he went to. And I was just like in shock. I kept thinking he was going to say, I'm just bullshitting. Here comes the real story. But that was the story, you know, like I don't know. It was the complete opposite of what I was expecting. So he confused me with the story. And yet again, he confused me as the, you know, the type of athlete that you try and peg and figure out, and yet you still can't, you know, because in a moment where he can actually flex a little, he decided to be more humble and self-deprecate, and it was hilarious. It was hilarious, and I'm a big fan of New York Badass forever, just because he's, you know, he's close to our show, and he has stirred emotion, you know, within me. First, wanting to, you know, cheer for him to lose, and then the fact that he's been able to, I guess, just show that he's he's got a quality side to him, and everything you see, you know, on stage, it doesn't exactly represent what he's really like.
George, just so for the folks that weren't listening live to the beginning of the show, and just in case it gets edited out, of course, you mentioned on MMA Junkie Radio on Tuesday that you would be watching a soccer game. So before I get into my question, I wanted to thank you very much for still doing the show, even though you've been up for a very long time. And as you had told me earlier, the game wasn't all that good, right?
Yeah, the result wasn't. We really needed the 3 points that come with a victory. Instead, we got 1 point that comes with a draw. And, you know, the soccer game, for those that don't know, is 90 minutes long, and we were like in the 77th minute, and we were winning 1-0. So they tied it at the end. And even though we're not going to win the league, we're not going to take first place, if you finish within the first four, you advance into next season's Champions League. And what that is, it's a lucrative tournament amongst all the best teams from different leagues in Europe. So there's a lot of money at stake and a lot of prestige at stake. And so when you go out and recruit players during the summer, because their season goes August to May, so when you try and convince players to, you know, to play for you, you want to also make the pitch, hey, not only are we Manchester United, we are Manchester United and we're involved in, you know, our normal domestic league and cup, league and cups, and also in Champions League. So, well, that's what we're fighting for. We're in fifth place, and today we could have been in third place with about four games to go. So there's still a chance. There's still a couple ways to get into that Champions League. But, you know, it's a little tougher. Now, I don't hold it against them too much because we just lost probably our best player this year for the year last week. So we're missing him now, and we've just been ravaged with injuries. And these players have played a lot of games. I believe they played like 11 in April, and that's just a lot, man. So, I mean, you know, they're probably exhausted at this point. You know, when you're exhausted is when you make mistakes, much like MMA.
Hey, George, I have a question for you. I mean, clearly, and we'll talk some Niners in a few minutes, but how'd you get, and I think you've told this story before, but being, of course, a Santa Ana kid, growing up in the LC, growing up in Southern California, how'd you become a soccer and a Man United fan?
Because I'm half Peruvian, and that's the side of my family that I was closest to. So my mom was born in Peru, and she married a Mexican-American guy, and my dad. He was born here, but his family, a couple generations back, were from Mexico. The problem is, my mom came from a really privileged family, you know, wealthy, and so, honestly, I'll put my mom on blast. She was a little bit of a snob, and my dad lost his parents at an early age, so he was raised by an aunt and an uncle who were hardworking, you know, blue collars, and so, for her, she came off just differently, you know. I could see how her and my dad's side of the family just sometimes didn't always get along. So for many years, my dad obviously sided with my mom, and I wasn't close to my dad's side of the family. And so I didn't embrace the Mexican culture as much. And so my mom's father, who was my grandfather, who had a big business down there, he would fly us to Peru a lot. And we have a large family over there. And so that was the family that I got to know. So literally when school was over in May, you know, I would late May, early June, I'd head to Peru and be there for 3 months. And while I'm there, you know, that's what you do. You watch soccer, you play soccer. Everybody, you know, everybody played foosball, and everybody got around the TV when Peru played or when the local soccer team played. And then my grandfather also played for the local soccer team professionally. So it's just a lot of, you know, soccer in the blood on that side. And the stadium was right around the corner from my grandparents' house. So, like I say, you just get immersed in it. So as a kid, I played it a lot. When I'd come back to the United States, nobody wanted to play, you know. And so my dad wanted me to get into football and baseball and basketball. And I did. I did, and I enjoyed it. But I never really got into soccer. For one, soccer season kind of conflicted with basketball. And I guess my dad didn't make as big of a push as he should have. I think if he would have said, well, what do you prefer? I probably would have said, get me into soccer, you know. But I just went with the with the basketball theme. Yeah, you know, at that particular time, Magic Johnson, like when he came out of Michigan State, it was like 1979, And so those are influential years for a kid like me. You know, I'm 10, and so the next thing you see a guy like that, you want to beat Magic Johnson. How does he do it? Around the back, through the legs, you know? And so I was pretty coordinated. I picked up basketball quick. And I think in those years and just becoming a better basketball player, I slowly got away from soccer. But it didn't mean I didn't love soccer. I had it in my fabric. And I had gone to soccer games, so I just knew nothing to replicate the experience of going to a soccer game, especially in a third world country. Guys, it's fucking nuts, man. It's like life or death, you know? And here in the United States, it's still that way, but it's a little bit more, you know, 50-50 life or death, and 50-50, it's a business, it's corporate, you know? And so eventually, let me see, it was like, you know, back in the early 90s, you started, I don't know if you guys remember, you might not, Proteus, because you're in the Great White North, so I don't know how your cable satellite systems work, but Tony, I don't know if you remember On TV and Select TV?
Yes.
They came about before cable systems. We had that, and so they had NASL, and I kind of got into that a little bit. I'd still keep an eye on it. You know, a couple Peruvian players would play there. But it was like in the early 90s when all of a sudden just cable blew up. Someone knocked on the door and said, how'd you like HBO and Cinemax and this, that, whatever. Well, the one thing you could catch from time to time was English Premier League. And I was fascinated. The same way Magic Johnson caught my eye, it was a guy named Eric Cantona who played for France. Or sorry, he was a Frenchman who played for Man United, and he wore his collar up, and I thought that was so cool. And from time to time, you'll see me do that on the show. And I guess he drew me to Manchester United. You couldn't get any of the teams in Peru. You could get the Mexican teams, but I wasn't interested in that. And so it was just the first soccer I was going to be exposed to on a regular basis. And that just became my team.
All right. Just to shift gears a little bit, George, because when we had you on for the first championship rounds, it was sort of pre the 10-year anniversary of MMA Junkie Radio. And now we're post that anniversary. And maybe we can get you to just look back a little bit and reminisce a little bit about the 10 years, because I saw a couple of photos floating around about in regards to the tag days, and it just kind of it took me back to reminiscing of, you know, when you guys were in that small little red room and Jenny had her little plastic phone and, you know, she would screen all the calls for you. And I don't know, just kind of brought back years of memories for me. And I expect that kind of same thing happened for you. And so kind of give us your thoughts about that, and maybe just touch on the fact that having another junkie gathering this year, and it's probably going to be a really, really big gathering. So the floor is now yours.
By the way, are you two coming to the gathering?
Unfortunately, I'm not.
Okay, how about you, Tony?
Hey, I actually should be there. I'm not planning on being there. I can't be there all week, but I was literally planning on going there the first 2 days because it's just with the new house and just I don't want to get divorced, so I want to make sure that I'm keeping my wife happy.
I got you. Well, congratulations on the new house. Proteus,
thanks. Yeah,
how come you can't come out?
Well, it is unfortunately extraordinarily expensive to fly from Toronto Airport, which is the one that flies to Vegas. I'm probably sure that I could find a cheaper deal. However, having two young children at this time as well makes it very difficult not only to find the funds, but also to find the time to get out there. I also do run my own business, so if I don't work, I don't make any money, so that's kind of another thing as well.
I see. Okay. Well, we'd love to have you sometime, and Tony, look forward to seeing you.
I'd love to be there.
Even if it's just for a couple days. It's. I ask because, you know, you two guys are a big part of Junkie Nation, and not only are there a lot of junkies there, there's a lot of fighters there. It's just a good old time with people you click with in terms of when it comes to mixed martial arts, because outside... You know, like outside my bubble, you'll often hear me talk about my buddies, Woody, Big Ralph, Squid, Gabe, a few others. And a few of them latch on to MMA, but none of them like I do, obviously. You know, a few of them really do watch more than the others. But sometimes if you get into some hardcore MMA talk, you start to lose them, you know, because as much as they're getting into it and they know it, that's it. It ends there. And at the gathering, fuck, man, it's the exact opposite. You know, there's people that I have trouble keeping up with because they remember every single stat. So it's just really cool to have to just immerse yourself kind of like in your own little world, you know, a little cult. But regardless, as far as what you were asking, the 10 years, it was, you know, I reflected a lot because it's not that I didn't think we could hang around for 10 years. It's just that you don't really imagine how it's going to play out when you first start out on a project. And so looking back, my problem is, instead of smelling roses and being appreciative, I often think back of the mistakes that we made, or could we have gotten bigger sooner, or could we be bigger than we are now, you know? And I think I need to stop that and just say, very happy and content where we were at, learn from your mistakes. And then in the next 10 years, you know, maybe make up that ground or do whatever. But oftentimes, like I say, I'm a negative Nancy, and so I look back and focus on the wrong things. But all it takes is like a cool video or a picture that someone posts, and then all of a sudden I become nostalgic, and then I'll find myself going through old photos and smiling. And it's good for the soul, you know, to look back on all that and see what you've created. So, you know, in that, there's so many moments that I forgot, and I was able to revisit, you know, through videos and pics and things like that. But, you know, it does mean a lot that, you know, we're still doing this. And I'm not sure. I know I mentioned this before. I just can't remember to who, but I'll say it again. Part of the ride that's stressful for me is that I feel like I brought my brother along for it. And the way where I get this from is because Nick Diaz once was asked about fighting, and, you know, he says, I don't really like fighting. I do it, you know, they pay me well, but honestly, I really don't like it. And that caught me off guard, because if you feel like there's a fucking gangster out there in our sport somewhere, it's Nick Diaz. Like, he can't wait to scrap. But it's the exact opposite. He actually has fears. He doesn't like it. It just so happens he's good at it. And once the lights are on, he turns it on, you know, and he goes out there. Most of the time, he's laying the ass but not taking it. But he did say something a few years ago that stuck with me. It kind of hit me, and he goes, I feel like I'm responsible for my brother getting into it. Because his brother was going down a long path, and he kept telling him, come with me to the gym, come with me to the gym. Next thing you know, he got his brother in the jiu-jitsu, and now his brother's a black belt, now his brother's fighting. And up until the Conor fights, they were doing okay, but I don't think they were doing well. And now Nate Diaz is probably set, unless he were to blow through all his money and retire. I mean, I think he should still fight and keep adding to, you know, his bank account. But at least I think he has some money where he can relax and feel like he's made it. And I think Nick can probably rest a little bit better. Well, along for the ride with me is my brother. My brother's got a psychology degree, you know, and his path in life was probably headed in another direction too. And now we started the show, and we're 10 years in, and I feel a little bit of the pressure that our show needs to succeed and do well, because I feel like I also brought my brother along for the ride where maybe he could have done something else. And so I, you know, it's pressure that I've taken on. So, again, you look at the pictures, you're nostalgic, you're pleased, you're proud, but the focus is still going forward and continuing to grow the show. And you know, one day when we have a Nate Diaz type of payout, then maybe I can, like, chill out and relax a little bit more. Because you know, even on days where I have a bad day and I always think, maybe this is the end of our run or we should start doing something else, I always convince myself that I can't let my brother down. This thing has to succeed because he has to be well off, you know, when it's all said and done.
Gigi, let's talk about that, because one thing, so years ago when I was a little kid, I always wanted to be a DJ. And when I was a little kid growing up in the Mission, I'm born and raised in San Francisco. When I was a little kid, there was a famous DJ by the name of Dr. Don Rose. And as a kid, I was probably 8 or 10 years old. I went to his studio, and that's what got me into doing the whole thing. But I fell in love with the business back then. And during that time, I remember him telling me one thing. He said, being a host on a show, it's never about you. Never make it about you. It's always about the show. It's always about the music. It's always about the callers. It's never about you. And I think the one thing that you guys have done that's been different from everybody else, including, of course, you know, the characters that you have, the Marco from Waco's, the Buffalo Blues, the Hal, who to me is the most funniest person on Junkie Radio, you know, the Showtimes, the C to the Triple B, all these people, is that you've always made it about the callers. Was that something that you guys did from the beginning? Because I think that's what makes you guys more successful than anyone in this business, period.
Well, we actually did. We've taken calls since day one. And trust me, that was not easy back in the day, because now podcasting's being figured out a little bit more. But when we first started this, we had to call our cable company. I forget who we had, like Cox Cable, Century Cable, one of those popular ones that you always hear about. And we had to call them, and then we had to call, you know, I don't know if it was Pac Bell or one of the Bells, and tell them we would like six lines, you know? So it was awkward to call a phone company and ask for six lines and to have, you know, an upgrade in cable and then have a, you know, try finding a specialist then that's able to hook all that up and tie it all into a soundboard. And so it was pretty rough, and it was actually really expensive. But I wanted to keep going what Ryan Hitman, you know, Ryan Bennett had started. Now, I don't mean to put Hitman and Trig on blast, but they did things a lot cheaper. I saw what they did. Basically, Hitman had his phone and Trig had his phone, and they just basically chatted via the phone, and they were able to tie it in through a soundboard. But the way Ryan would get a guest on is he had another guest and he would just put the phone on speaker and flip the phone upside down, and that was it. Now, Ryan had a family of four, I get it, you know, and so he was just trying to keep costs down, and actually he was able to pull it off. But when I started reading about podcasting, it kept saying, one thing that your audience will always recognize and respect is if you had good sound quality. So I just tried to take it, you know, take it up a notch from there. Now, at the same time, back in the early 90s, in my Eric Cantona days, I also used to listen to a show on the Mighty 690 in San Diego, and it was the Jim Rome Show. Now, this was when he was just in San Diego. He wasn't national. He wasn't on HBO. He wasn't on CBS, none of that. He was just one of the sports talk guys, and he encouraged people to call in, and he wanted people to talk smack. That was a big thing of his. And so little by little, he weeded out regular callers, and slowly but surely, everybody became a pretty top-notch caller. Think, you know, to the level of what you were saying earlier, Marco, Tony, about the Marcos and see the trophies. And I mean, people like, I think people were actually rehearsing their calls, but it was pretty solid. You know, every once in a while they flubbed up, but I started to become one of those callers. And so I really enjoyed being a part of Jim Rome's show. I really enjoyed being a part of Ryan Bennett's show. So for sure, when we started Tag Radio, we wanted to have a platform where others enjoy being on our show, having a character, you know, whether it was recurring daily or weekly, it didn't matter, but we wanted people to be like small co-stars to kind of like our daily soap opera, if you will.
Yeah, and I remember as a young, as a newer listener, falling in love with those characters just because we're talking about them. You would look forward to hearing that voice, you know, and that's why the passing of Rick Budo, and I'm going to bring the show down for a sad second here. Just the passing of Brick hit me so hard. I never met him, but I listened to his voice for years. You know what I mean? And it's the same with Johnny Rico. I used to listen to him, and of course Fisher. Fish was on the show all the time. It just being a listener, and before I called in, just falling in love with those characters on the show. It cemented me to the show a little bit more and brought me in just that little bit more. And of course, you guys saying, you know what, it's just a discussion with friends. Don't be scared. Just call in. And nowadays, you don't really need to do that anymore. Well, I guess you do. But I remember back in the day just being you know, very, very scared to call into the show, and eventually did it. And I'm sure I put Jenny through hell a couple of times when I called in because I didn't really know what I was doing. So just really nostalgic. That's kind of what this conversation is about back, and, you know, what the 10th anniversary did for me. Just really cool people, you know.
Well, thank you. You know, it can be one of two things. We're either going to call them, but you're either going to call in and we're going to bust your chops, or we're going to have a pleasant conversation. And it's just random. You know, some days you're just talking, and then all of a sudden we're like, yeah, I don't agree with your point, but let's just turn it into a heated discussion, or, you know. And the funny thing is, or at least on our end, is we control whether the call continues or not. So every once in a while we like to mix it up, you know. It's not always going to be kumbaya or whatever, but for the most part, I think everyone knows that that's our way of expressing our love. Even us hanging up on someone is our way of saying, hey, thanks for the call. There was a reason why we probably had to hang up, honestly. But, you know, if you'll notice, everybody continues to call back and continues to, you know, contribute to the discussion. So it's really, really, you know, a cool environment. And, you know, if not for you guys, it could turn into a long, boring, stale show. But Tony, I wanted to also jump on something you had said earlier about what you had learned from the San Francisco-based DJ. You know what's funny is I recently attended a seminar with some people from SiriusXM, and one of the presenters was actually saying the exact opposite of what you were saying. And it's interesting because I never want to stop learning, but as he was saying it, like, make it about you, you know, versus not about you. I was thinking, wow, like, how do we bridge that, you know? But we have 10 hours to figure it out. It's 2 days a week, 2 hours a day, 5 times a week. So I think we're going to try and find some sort of a balance. But I understood what he was saying, and that guy had some time in radio too. But it's funny how, you know, different people who have success can have just different opinions. You know, radio can go in many different directions, but it's when you stop thinking, when you start thinking you know it all and stop learning, that's when I think your downfall can start. So I was very glad that I went, took a lot of notes, and now you just start kind of mixing it up in your game. Because at the end of the day, it's your show, and you have to be happy. If not, then your listeners will know and pick up on it, and they'll go to another show.
That's a funny thing. I think the guy's right about when a journalist goes into broadcasting. It's different the other way around, right? Because when you go to broadcasting school and you're taught certain things, right? Because you can always tell when someone has energy or they don't, right? Gigi, I mean, the monotone voice, and you hear all these MMA related podcasts, and I'm just going off of MMA because that's typically, it's a journalist that goes into broadcasting as opposed to a broadcasting person that goes into MMA, right? It usually doesn't work that way, and that's why I think you need that. But you do need that bombastic sort of over-the-top voice because you can't sound like this and just continue to talk like this and think people are going to listen to. That doesn't work, right? So I agree with him when it's a journalist going into, you know, to MMA, but when it's a personality like you, for example, you were a fan, you weren't a journalist, you got into it, but that love, that fervor for the sport comes across when it doesn't come across with some of the other podcasts.
Well, thank you. You know, that's something that we still continue to work on. And 10 years in, I'm still not convinced we've found our niche. Somebody tells us just being yourself is your niche. We got really lucky, guys. We really did. And that's why when people ask me, hey, what do you think of me starting a show or a website? Man, I come down hard because first I want to see if you really want to do it and how much you want to do it. Because at the same time, it's also very difficult to do. And we just happen to get lucky at the right time. You know, I don't know that it'd be as easy for a fanboy to now host a show that you know, maybe if it's, whether it's aligned with a website or whatever, it's just going to be a lot more difficult. And so we realize that, and to just change my voice. You know, sometimes we get a little bit more fired up, and so a little bit more radio voice might come out, but then usually I can knock that off in like 5 or 10 minutes, and then I revert to just being me and having fun and conversing with our guests and the callers or whatever. But, you know, I'm sure what they teach in school, man, is a lot different than what we do. And so what works for some might not work for others. You just have to – I wish I had your kind of schooling, Tony. I know you actually went for that, so I would love to have learned everything you learned. Trust me on that one.
Yeah, speaking from the other side of this learning curve, Gorgeous George, I appreciate you know, everything not only that you guys do on a daily basis, because as you said, running a show for 2 hours is not an easy thing, especially if you don't have anybody else to bounce things off of. Like, it's you and goes, but if you don't have callers, 2 hours can be a long time to fill. And as, you know, a podcaster myself and just learning on the go, having Tony here to teach me on the fly has been really great to have. I mean, things always haven't been smooth. Just like your show, things always haven't been smooth. But, you know, you want, like you said, you either want to do it, George, Gorgeous George, you either want to do it or you don't want to do it. And if you have a passion for it, then that's going to come through. But I just want to change directions here again on us, if I can, because I know you're from Orange County, correct?
Yes, sir. The main streets of South Coast Metro inside of Santa Ana.
Now, I watch a vlogger on the YouTube, and he lives in the Orange Circle. Is that close to where you were? And I apologize for my ignorance.
Yeah, it's really close. It's probably like 10 minutes.
Oh, cool. So that looks like a really, really nice place to live. I mean, maybe just a little bit of a sleepier town, but really nice area. So, and of course, California is just beautiful anyways, right, guys? I mean, who's kidding who? We had some sunshine on Friday, and today we're back down to 0 degrees. So that's fun. So I just wanted to, that was just me trying to get my geography in check. So the Orange Circle is a really nice area right near you. And of course, they made that name because you grow a lot of oranges there, correct?
Well, yeah, I believe so. In Orange County, when it was just all, you know, fields and stuff, yes. A lot of oranges were grown, but, you know, that was late 1800s, early 1900s, when the state of California was establishing itself. And now there's almost nowhere to grow oranges because California real estate is so valuable. Every time I come back, you know, I always wonder, hey, you know, that field that was just sitting there doing nothing, it's got homes, it's got a couple, you know, it's got building on it or something. But yeah, that's where it started. And the Orange Circle's actually been in a few movies. I wish I knew them off the top of my head, but I know one of them is a Tom Hanks movie. If I had the lovely Juliet next to me, she could tell me real fast. But that Orange Circle has been preserved a little bit, and so a lot of movie sets, you know, use that, you know, their little downtowns, because still a lot of mom and pop shops, and again, it's been preserved. But Orange County is beautiful. It's between San Diego and L.A., closer to L.A. than San Diego. The weather's great, and it's a nice mixture of people, you know, cultures and races, and it's laid back. California is really, really laid back. In New York City, if somebody barely cuts you off, you can expect curse words to fly back and forth. In California, it's just like, oh, my bad, you know? I mean, no big deal. I certainly got better things to do than sit here and argue with you or curse you out or get cursed out back. It's just go on about your business. I'll go on about mine, and that's that. People just aren't as uptight. People are really, really relaxed, and it's I miss it. I'm here right now, actually, in California, but I'll be heading back to Vegas later on. Vegas is only 3 hours away, about maybe closer to four. And Vegas is where we need to be for our jobs, but I will probably eventually return to California at some point when our run's over.
Gigi, I got to ask you this. So you're in California right now. Where are you, SoCal?
I am. I'm in Southern California. I got invited by Jake Ellenberger and John Orlando to do the Action Junkies podcast that they just started. And
sweet.
So I wanted to do that, and I hadn't seen my mom in a while, and I know that Mother's Day is coming up, so I was going to see her in 2 weeks, but every time, you know, her and I talk a lot, and every time I had talked to her, because we were supposed to go for her birthday a few weeks ago, and then Goz got sick, I just felt terrible, and I thought, oh, man, you know what, I'm just going to drive down there, and I'm gonna do John's podcast, and hung out with Big Ralph, and I'm going to go see my mom after this, and you don't have to twist my arm to come out here, that's for sure.
Hey, Gigi, let me ask you about this. Of course, we're both Niner fans, and we hardly ever get to talk Niner football when you're obviously on Junkie, specifically, of course, because it's an MMA-related show, even though, you know, we go off on tangents here and there. But let's talk about the Niners, because obviously the draft just came up after a pretty bad season. I was really looking forward to them getting a quarterback. I know I was texting Goz about this, about Kirk Cousins coming, and I really do think he's coming over to the Niners. But in the meantime, I obviously was really looking forward to Mitchell Trubisky. I was hoping they would draft him, and guess what? They pulled the rug under us, George. They actually drafted Solomon Thomas. So I wanted to see what your take was on that.
Well, here's the thing, Tony. I didn't mind the move, because if we get the quarterback, is the quarterback going to be able to develop? We have a great running back in Carlos Hyde, but I don't believe we have any other weapons. You know, we don't have a great fullback, an H-back, a tight end, wide receivers, an offensive line. And, like, the Dak Prescott's learning curve was so much shorter in Dallas because he had a great line that could protect him, and he had a great running back that could take the pressure off. So I'm not saying he's not going to be good, but I'm still curious how good Dak Prescott will be over the course of his career, because he's landed in a good spot right now. And so if we get a franchise-type QB, are we ready for him? I don't think so. I don't think we have the line to protect him. It's a first-year coach. And then the defense on the other side, you know, again, if you have a defense that can get some three and outs, then, you know, great. But if you have a defense that's constantly giving up 10-play drives, then the offense doesn't find its ability to get in sync. So I felt like I preferred moving from 2 to 3 and picking up an additional 3 draft picks and starting to shore things up. So I was happy with it, believe it or not, just because I don't think we're ready for that quarterback. And we may have to wait till the next one, or we may have to play with a veteran or something like that for this one. But I really want to improve the defense and improve all the skill positions. And then that way we're ready for a quarterback to come in and succeed. I think the learning curve for a quarterback is not what it used to be. Before, you draft one, and then like year 2, year 3, finally they'd come in. And now, as you see, they're able to come in and start and have success. So I'm not too scared of tackling that in 2018 and just making the team improve this year.
Now, George, yeah, you might be right. I know we are trying to... did you guys want to talk about that a little bit more? Because I know you're both heated about that particular team. I appreciate them myself, but go ahead if you want to talk more about that.
No. Go ahead, Proteus. Go.
I'm sorry. I was just trying to take a dig at you, and neither one of you said anything. Come on.
Well, we're definitely not in any position. I mean, we were horrific last year, and we got a new GM, a new coach, and all we can do is wait and hopefully be like 2-2 out of September. At least we'll start to feel a little bit better about ourselves, or maybe 8-8 this year. Now, once you start turning the curve, then you can ramp up the smack talk a little bit, you know, and let people know just how good you're going to be in 2018 or 19. But keeping it real, I mean, there's just nothing to fall back on. There's no promise yet. There's the results from the last few years have been atrocious. So, I mean, you got us. You're the one that could fire away on us.
Yeah, no worries. And of course, in today's NFL or today's professional sports in general, you really have to do a rebuild properly. But as I was saying, George, just to be cognizant of your time, and of course you want to go and meet up with Mama Garcia, so we got to get you out of here soon. But I'd be remiss if I didn't get into a little bit of MMA with you. Are you okay with that?
Yeah, as long as you need me.
Okay. So I did ask this question on Friday on MMA Junkie to Megan Levy and Joseph Benavides. And I believe I asked you this question on your show as well before when they just started breaking ground on the campus. My question again to you is, with all that the UFC is promising with this UFC campus, can you see it turning into something like, I don't know, I don't know what what I can compare it to. Maybe a university would be the best way to do it. Whereas, you go to university for football, you get an education, but you also get a very, very high education in football. So can you see that this UFC campus might in the future, I know it's very early days, but might in the future take on that kind of role as being an institution of MMA where you get a large education on MMA and in improving the sport exponentially?
If you're a Vegas-bred fighter, then maybe. Or if you're so raw and early in your career that you somehow made it to Vegas and grew up through Vegas, then yes. But what I would compare it to, Proteus, is if we're going to talk education, I feel like a lot of these fighters, by the time they get to the UFC, they already have their bachelor's degrees and their master's degrees. All right. And so what moving to Vegas at that point can do is add to all the knowledge you already have and maybe get you a doctorate, you know? Oh man, all these years I was cutting this weight this way. I didn't know I could do it that way. Or I didn't know that I could recover in a certain direction or whatever. But because this is such a worldwide sport, a lot of these fighters, they grow up near a certain gym and they stay loyal to the gym. I mean, whoever it is that got you to the UFC, you got to feel like, holy shit, I got to stay with this guy or this gal because they're the ones that, picked me up and created me and did this. And so there's a lot of loyalty in the sport. You don't see much movement until they get a little bit older. Now I'll give you an example of the opposite. Our good friend Kevin Lee grew up in Detroit, but he also wanted to get out of Detroit, not just because he wanted to further his MMA career, but he just wanted to get him and his family out of Detroit for personal reasons. And so by the time he got to Vegas, now he's still young in the UFC, and I believe he's still growing. Extreme Couture is kind of like his hub gym, but he goes over to Drysdale's and does his Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. He goes to Mayweather's and does some boxing. He kind of travels the circuit a little bit, and he'll even go to other gyms. He's constantly trying to improve. Most of the time, though, they've either, again, come to Vegas early on in their career and stayed here, or just been born in Vegas or grew up in Vegas, and they can take advantage of something like that. But the most I'll see other athletes do, what I predict, is they'll come in, do their camps, and realize, hey, this is pretty cool. But I don't know that they'll leave where they're at and make Vegas their home. I think that'll be rather rare. What I think they may do is an 8-week camp when they know they're fighting in Vegas, maybe rather than coming in the week of, maybe they'll come in like 3 weeks before just to take advantage of all the amenities and adjust themselves to the dry heat and the air and all that. But I don't know that it'll be as common as you might think.
Yeah, and I think I do believe that was your view when I asked you this question when they started breaking ground. So that's very interesting because I've been thinking about it a lot, and my opinion on it has changed a bit because I've asked two professional fighters about the campus, one being Anthony Smith at Lionheart Smith, and of course on Friday with Joby One, and they both had different answers. Joe said, "Yeah, it's going to change the sport," and Anthony said, "Not so much," because he is an East Coast guy. So that may go with exactly what you're saying. Very, very interesting. One more question from me, George, on MMA, and then Tony's going to take it away with something a little bit more lighthearted. I wanted to talk about Frank Mir. I mean, he's been a friend of the show for quite a long time. And of course, we heard about his USADA suspension being upheld and kind of the mishandling of the case by USADA. And of course, I just want to highlight here, because I know Tony's on the line and his knuckles are clenched right now. He did warn us about USADA, that they are not really what we thought they were. So just quickly comment on the Frank Mir situation, and maybe just quickly on USADA and how you, I mean, they've only been, what, it's more just over a year or something now with USADA, just how you think they're doing, maybe grade card, A, B, C, how you think they're doing.
Okay. As far as Frank Mir is concerned, I guess the fact that he tried to get additional testing to clear his name, because he was adamant about the fact that he wanted to clear his name, I was happy to see that. I think it's one thing to say it. I think it's another thing to act on it. Now, granted, to do it is rather expensive, but I feel like it's worth it if you want to clear your name, and that's something he really, really wanted to do. Now, through that process, apparently not the test he was flagged for, but another one, they changed the results of that. Now, that doesn't look good in terms of what he's trying to prove, and that's that this was an anomaly, I guess, because now USADA is saying there might be a second test out there that has the same results, you know. For metabolites of a substance I can't even remember. And so at this point, they've already come down and given him 2 years. He still has said what he has said, and that's that he is innocent, and knowingly he didn't take anything that enhanced his performance, perhaps something that he ingested, you know, as part of his nutrition, may have been tainted. Now, I can do one of two things. I can really dive into this and see, well, you know, what's both sides and who's right, who's wrong, and whatever, but I don't concern myself with too much of that, guys, because I'm not as passionate about the topic as others. Like, I bet you a Larry Pepe could do a whole show, and I would listen because I'd want to educate myself. But in my position, like, MMA has engulfed my life so much that I only worry about, I guess, the X's and O's, who's fighting who, who's going to win, how do I make the show better, who's going to be on the show, you know, and then communicating with the editorial back and forth. And if I had more of a role where, you know, let's say like Mike Bond's kind of our statistics guy and Stephen Morocco is more of our investor. In fact, that's a great guy to probably have on our show soon is Stephen Morocco, where he can give a better breakdown of what's happening here. He's very well educated when it comes to that. But again, I applaud Mir for investing a little bit of money into trying to clear his name. And at this point, they've given the 2 year sentence. He's already a year. And luckily, at his age, he, I believe, can survive this. I think he'd be better suited to stay with the UFC because I think that's where he can probably make the most money. But, I mean, he's also been working with these Russian organizations as a commentator. So he probably has a good idea of how, you know, the scene's blowing up out there and perhaps they are paying a little bit more out there, and that's why he's asking for his release. But this is a Vegas guy through and through. So, from the distance, it looks to me like he'd be better off just waiting things out throughout the year, get better, and then come back, you know, come back and try and have a run. The heavyweight division's going nowhere, you know. Things just shake up the way they shake out. And, yeah, he fell behind a little bit, but, damn, like, Alistair Overeem just got knocked out in September 2016. And then he comes back with, you know, a couple wins, and boom, like within a year, he could be right back in the title mix. It's that easy. You know what I mean? So it's not a career killer or nothing like that. You know, so if he ever asked me, what do you think? I'd say, man, you got a year left. Just get better. The time off has probably been good for your body. And then in the end, whoever can take care of you and your family the best, then I guess decide that. But to me, it's always going to feel like the UFC can do that. If you're a major star, and Frank is a major star. As far as USADA is concerned, that's a great question. One of the things that was sucking balls the most a few years ago was waking up and seeing and reading about these stars getting popped for performance enhancing drugs. I didn't care so much about the marijuana stuff or whatever. I only cared because I couldn't believe someone couldn't shake pot for 30 days, but whatever. But to see, you know, decisions be reversed or no contest, it's like all the buildup was for nothing. The fight happening was for nothing. And it really made our sport look terrible. I mean, it really did, especially as we were continuing to grow. Because myself, you two, Junkie Nation, most of us can figure out, well, what's really, really impacting someone's career? What's really, really deciding the result? Is it technique? Is it the fact that someone's enhanced? Well, if they're all enhanced, then it doesn't matter, whatever. But it's the potential fan that we were just killing off, you know, the casual fan that's just reading a headline and all they're seeing, they're not seeing so-and-so has been made aware of a potential anti-doping event. They're not seeing that. They're seeing so-and-so is a cheater. And they see so-and-so is a cheater and another guy's a cheater and another guy. All of a sudden they think everyone's a cheater. You know, that sport is barbaric. It's just people cheating and whatever. And so that part, I believe it needed to stop. It needed to cut off if the sport was going to continue to grow. Now, the UFC went out and got one of the strictest drug testing programs out there. So I applaud them for that because it's expensive. And, you know, it definitely was going to eventually hurt them economically. And they were willing to do that. But now they have stricter drug testing than the NFL, MLB, NBA. And it may take a few years. But going forward, I think it's going to be for the betterment of the sport, you know, so even though it's ruined a few cards, because I really feel like there's been some fighters that have been popped for minor stuff, metabolites, stuff that really wasn't going to impact the fight, and mostly through their ignorance, because most of the time they're like, I didn't know, I didn't read the label, you know, and I think USADA made it very clear that this is what's allowed. These are your resources that are available to you. Call us at any time, you know, so that you are completely aware of what's right and what's wrong. It's just that fighters are lazy. They're not going to do that, you know. And so now they got to pay the price, and that price is possibly 2 years of their career. So to answer your question, I would say I'd give it a B. I think they probably could have schooled the fighters just a little bit more, even though they are adults and they should have, you know, they should have been able to get a better grasp of the regulations, you know, if you saw it enforcing the WADA guidelines. It's just that you just have to know better. You have to know who you're working for. And in the end, they're working for the UFC and their athletes. So I think that it all could have been handled a little bit more, you know, with a little bit more preparation. And that way it wouldn't have impacted some of the cards, because I don't believe that all of them were cases of somebody trying to enhance their performance.
Hey, GG, as we end this, I want to I have a good idea for a guest that you guys may want to have. Do you know Bristol Marundi?
Yeah, you know, Goz's been trying to court him because apparently his show's blowing up.
It's really doing well. Yeah.
He was going to be on like 3 or 4 weeks ago, and he had to back out because he had some additional tapings that he needed to do. And so then it got rerouted to, I think, the week where we were going to go to Virginia. So then we said, well, we'll touch base after that. And then Goz got really sick, and now he's got his hands full with our new intern. But I'm going to give Goz a nudge and tell him, hey, whatever happened with that, you know, are we ready to go? Because for one, every time he comes in, we always have a good time. But two, we're so happy for him because this is a passion of his. And it's doing well. And, you know, he's still involved in MMA. In fact, I saw him tweeting the other day that he needed an amateur for a certain weight class. So he still has a show going up in Washington. And, you know, he's really, really a good guy, man.
Well, make sure Gigi that you also get his wife on there, because that one's not a bad thing. All right, Gigi, I want to end you on this. So I used to have a thing when I had another podcast. I used to have a thing called 5 on 5, right? Or 5 in 5, top 5 in 5. So I want to ask you about this as I get you out of here. We're going to do a quick version. We're going to do a top 3 in 3 minutes. So your best So your top three songs that you like to sing when you're in the shower, hit it. Whew. I'm not asking you to sing. Don't worry. I'm just asking you to. Yeah, I'm not asking you to sing. By the way, I love that bit that you do where you make us sing before we actually go into our topic. You should really do that a lot more often. But the top three shower songs that you like to sing.
God, oh, man, I'm really, let's see here. I for one, I don't really sing in the shower, but if I was going to, it would probably be something I grew up with, like Michael Jackson or Prince, because that's back when I listened to an album more often, and I knew, you know, the words. You just get familiar through videos or from, you know, hearing it get played over and over. And now I've been into the electronic dance music so much that nobody would really recognize anything. Plus, I don't really sing along, but it'd probably be Michael Jackson or Prince, or maybe probably those two. Yeah,
right. I kind of got into this.
Want to be starting something that I like. Let's Go Crazy by Prince. You know, those are a couple that stand out.
So those are good ones. And you actually brought this up a little, but your top three when Megan was there with Jiu-Jitsu, but your top three cereals.
Cereals?
Morning cereals, right. Well, cereals could be eaten at any time of the day, right? But
My all-time favorite is Cocoa Puffs. Not Cocoa Pebbles, but Cocoa Puffs. There's nothing better than, I love chocolate, so that chocolatey taste, and then the milk gets all chocolatey at the end, and you tip that bowl over and finish it off. I love it, man. Sometimes I'll have like two or three bowls. I can't stop myself. I'm also a big fan of Apple Jacks, and this one's tough, man, because there's a lot of great cereals out there. believe it or not, I'll just throw you guys a curveball. I also like, I'm one of the few that still likes Raisin Bran. Now, the only problem is, sometimes you just have to, you have to make sure you're home for that one. You can't be doing it in the cafeteria because you have Raisin Bran. The first thing you want to do is floss.
I'm surprised you didn't bring up Count Chocolate. All right, and the last thing, we'll leave you out on this. Your top three superhero movies.
Top three superhero movies. Well, I really did like the first Superman with Gene Hackman because I thought he was a great villain. And Christopher Reeve, I thought, did well, you know, with that part. And then I would say, I guess the Spider-Man series with Tobey Maguire and Kirsten Dunst, because I always thought Kirsten Dunst and her little crooked teeth were kind of cute. I thought she was cute. I thought that scene when she's making out with Tobey Maguire and she's got the dress all stuck on her because it got wet. Oof.
Yes.
That was brilliant there. And then, again, going back to being a little bit more OG, I won't say movie, but the Batman series with Adam Ward back in the day.
Yep.
That was just classic stuff to me, man. I don't know. It was corny, and you watch it now, but it still holds up. And now you have all these abilities to have, what do they call it, you know, CGI and you know, all this editing they can do. They can make stuff realistic. But if you'll notice, those movies don't stand the test of time as some of the stuff that was made in the 60s or 70s. Again, just because of a little bit, it was first, it's a little bit corny, but you weren't influenced by, like now if a movie comes out, there's like 10 other ones coming out. And then you got like 100 shows on cable TV racing for your attention and sporting events and Facebook and this and that. Whereas back then when you fell in love with something, you fell in love with it. So it meant something. It stuck with you. The old Batman series, if I happen to find it on TV, fuck, I'll DVR it and I'll spend a couple weeks catching up on episodes. I mean, think about it, dude. Do you guys remember Batgirl back in the day and Catwoman? Was actually Meriwether was her name. Yeah, and she was an actual Miss USA. So when she came on the screen and you're a little kid watching that, you're going, my God, this is so cool. This is legit. And there's nothing else that's competing for your attention. So it stays with you.
It sure does. Hold on, that drop didn't go. Sorry, GG.
The drop didn't go.
Yeah, the drop didn't go there, GG. Sorry. Boy, hey, now we can't get rid of it. Hang on. Yeah. What's that, GG?
Well, Proteus mentioned something about USADA. Are you not a fan of USADA? Something about you clenching your fist? Are you not? Is there something about USADA you're not a fan of, or?
So here's the thing. So I'm a huge cycling fan. So just like how you got into like Euro sports with soccer, I'm a huge cycling fan because I've always been a cyclist. So I know USADA pretty darn well, and I know Novitski in terms of just knowing him well outside of MMA. Not that I know him on a personal level, because I'd love to have him on a show. I just know the way USADA and WADA work. I think people get the idea that USADA is this pro bono type company that's doing everything for the great of the sport. However, and they may have good intentions. However, USADA is a for-profit company that does things to benefit them. And although they are being, of course, they are extremely expensive, we don't know what their true motives are. And another thing is, they don't work for the UFC, or rather, they are a UFC employee now that they're paid by the UFC. This isn't a third party, or this isn't a federation of some sorts. This is a for-profit company that's doing things in the best interest of the UFC, even though people may not see it.
Well, I know Novitski works for the UFC, but explain to me, I mean, USADA is being hired by the UFC to oversee their testing program. But why do you say that they're working for the UFC? They get paid by the UFC to oversee their testing program, but they're the ones that test and then eventually adjudicate. How's the UFC involved in that?
So I'll give you a prime example. And there's no way around this. And Proteus actually will stand on with me on this one. For example, the Brock Lesnar thing, right? So it's conveniently that test took forever, conveniently. And of course, they didn't get the results until after the fight. So that... You're telling me that there's no way that they knew that he was dirty, or I think USADA works when they want to work for the UFC. I mean, when they want to benefit the company, I'm sure that there's I'm sure those results could have come out a lot quicker.
Well, they were in line with how long the Jones results took. I think one took 21 days, the other one took 18 days. With Jones, they pulled him off the card. I hear you, Tony. What you're saying, after finding out that an expedited test costs less than $100, hey, why aren't we expediting? And when I think going forward, they will do it. And who knows? Maybe a conversation took place or not. But what I always stand on is we can't prove it. You know what I mean? And if I start to believe everything that I think could have happened, or what people speculate could have happened, rather than the facts, then I think I'll get away from loving the sport as much as I wanted, because I wouldn't want people to speculate on me, you know, but if someone has a fact on me or asks me and it's proven, then I feel a lot more better than someone speculating on me. So then we have to kind of, that's the job we have to do as well, is deal with the facts. But I'm not calling you crazy, that's for sure. it's just that in the position we're in, I just have to deal with what's seen in front of me, you know, and.
Yeah, I'm just going to weigh in real quickly if I can on this. I do want to be stated in fact. I do want to my mind open to not keeping, you know, my prejudice or my bias coming into making decisions. One thing I think that is holding up a lot of facts coming out, George, and we're gonna get you out here, I apologize, but you guys got me started a little bit. One thing that I think is holding the facts about the UFC or the way they've handled their business coming through is the class action lawsuit that we are still waiting to hear how discovery phase is going. Mm-hmm. But we also know that what was it? The Fighters Association, MA. Yeah, it was MA.
Yeah, Mixed Martial Arts Athletes Association.
Right, and they received a cease and desist order, from the grouping that was involved in the class action lawsuit. So I think that has slowed down a lot of the process of not only the fighters getting their own voice, but again, it's all what my point is. It's all kind of laid out in litigation right now, and it could take a number of years. And again, like I said earlier, USADA is in early days. But they have shown, in my opinion, that they can, if the stakes are correct, they can kind of flub things in a certain way. Just going back to the Frank Mir thing, with what Frank is saying, and if we can believe what Frank is saying, of course, it's all hearsay. Well, it's not hearsay, it's what he's saying. That the first test they told him was clean, and then they send it to another test, another lab, and then it comes back dirty. So it's just kind of weird things like that, George, that kind of put up red flags for me. I can't say that I'm totally against them, but there definitely are red flags that we can put up because of what has happened and what has come out into the mainstream.
Yeah. I would just say that, again, this is where I lose interest in following up because I have to allocate my time, my interest in the sport, and my personal time. But I would say if this is something you're passionate about, reach out to USADA and ask them what their version is of that first test. You've heard one version. Make sure you hear two versions.
That's right.
I think a lot of times people tend to go off, and people are usually going to side with the athlete. But if it interests you, check into that and see. I don't know. I only go off of what Frank said as well, that the first test, I think in February 16th versus the one in March of 16, they were with different results or whatever, and that's that, But I think they are going to help improve the sport, and I think they need to get better at communicating with the athletes, but I also believe the athletes need to do better about learning more and not just letting it roll off their shoulder. Well, I'm a UFC athlete. What I'm doing is Bible, those are tough habits to break, but you don't want to ultimately pay the price, not just with your wallet, but with your reputation as well.
Yeah, and I think what you said, that getting Steven on the show is probably the best bet, because he, again, is one of the best in the business. George, we have taken up more of your time than we had expected. We thank you very much for doing the show, as always. And, of course, as everyone knows, this is going to be a monthly thing that we're going to try and do with George, and as you can see, we're getting some great stuff coming out of it. So follow George personally at MMA Junkie George. Of course, he's on the Facebook too, if you prefer that. His counterpart, as he had mentioned, his brother, at The Goes, and of course, follow the show at MMA Junkie Radio. George, thank you very much again for giving us so much time and being so graceful with your time. I've always stated that you guys at Junkie are always so graceful with your time. I mean, I sat down with Mike Bond late Friday night at UFC 210, and he was open to having a drink with me. I've sat down with John Morgan and had a drink with him very late in the night. So you guys are just always so great with your time, and we really appreciate your time.
That's great, man. I'm glad you reached out to those guys. Those are some studs there, some pros. So I'm glad you're able to track them down. And again, hopefully we see you too. I know we'll see Tony at the Junkie Gathering. Hopefully we'll see you down the road, Proteus. Both of you, thank you very much for your time. It was a blast. And you let me know what time you need me, what day and time you need me in May, and I'll definitely love to join you guys again.
Awesome. You're the man, GG.
Yeah,
thanks a lot.
Can we run his music?
Yeah, absolutely. As I have to try to find it, Gigi, as I'm killing time here, because you know we're professionals here, Gigi. Yeah, we're professionals. We try to do things the right way, but good Lord, thanks a lot. You know what? I have to look for it. All right, well, Gigi, as always,
right, don't worry about it.
It's a pleasure.
All right, thanks, guys. Enjoy your day. Bye bye.
All right, bye. Take care.
Exit, stay dry. Take care, bro. See ya.
Wow, I threw you
GG
under the bus
is
there,
the
didn't
best. You did. I had the clothes cued, but you know what? This was fun. Like you and I were saying, it takes us back to the days what we're supposed to do. And I'm playing this song because I didn't play the right song when we closed last Sunday. So how about that?
Yeah.
Man, we got in deeper. I didn't want to take.
Yeah, go ahead.
No, gosh, I didn't want to take up that much time from GG because I know that he hadn't left and he was, busy. But I'll tell you, this was fun.
Yeah, absolutely. And Tony, again, as I mentioned earlier on when we were talking with George, we are coming up on our first year anniversary. And I wanted to thank you very much. And, of course, I wanted to thank Joe, who are the three of us were the original starters of the show. I wanted to thank you both very much for inviting me to do this show. It has been an eye-opening experience, and I've really enjoyed it. And fortunately, you know, Joe is not with us anymore. But onward and upward, brother, me and you. And the boys, of course.
How about
everybody else that comes along with the team.
On your birthday, we started it. How about that?
That's right. That's right. So I know I'm jumping the gun a little bit, but we're almost in May, so I was a little bit excited. I appreciate it.
Well, you know, as the great and very masculine Justin Timberlake always says, it's going to be May. How about that? All right. Hold on. Where are my crickets? All right. Let's get out of here. Do you have a Twitter follow of the week or anything?
Yeah, I've been watching a lot of Hot Ones on YouTube, and they have a Twitter handle as well, which, of course, right now I'm not having it right in my head because, of course, as you mentioned, we are professionals. But just go follow them on the YouTube, Hot Ones. I was inspired by them the other day. What they do is they have an interview and they eat hot wings and they get progressively hotter and hotter as you go. And I thought two nights ago that I would be brave and do a packet of hot sauce inspired by them, and I regretted it right after I did it.
Wow. Well, I'm going to give you one, even though I can't find her Twitter feed. I'm actually going to give a huge shout out to a show that I watch, which is called Flip or Flop Vegas. You know me and my home improvement shows. So follow Bristol Marundi, former UFC Strikeforce fighter. Follow him at Bristol, BRISTOL, Marundi, MARUNDE. Great show. All right, Proteus, let's get out of here. It's always, it's a blast. Follow Proteus at PROADOS. Follow us at Another MMA Cast. Follow me at I'm DJ Tony, the DJ and the PJs. And like that, whew, we're gone.
Hey, I'm not surprised, motherfuckers.